You're listening to Greater LA, KCRW's show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiotakis. I hope you're hanging in there today. The federal government spends 3 months counting all of us, everyone living in the United States of America, and they use that data to figure out political representation and to hand out federal money. Well, this time, of course, there's a new wrinkle. How do you conduct a census when everybody is isolating inside?
I can't believe there's this additional challenge and barrier that has come at this time in a way that is so beyond us and having to pivot yet again as to how do we get our communities counted.
That's June Lim. She works for Asian Americans Advancing Justice. It's a nonprofit civil rights organization. She's helping census takers find and count LA residents, especially in Asian communities. And she says they were already concerned about lower participation for immigrants. That's because of the Trump administration's attempt to add a question to the census about whether you are a citizen. The Supreme Court would not allow that question, but still, immigrant advocates have been worried that people won't fill out those forms. Well, now with the COVID-19 pandemic, they fear these enclaves will be even harder to reach. And without an accurate count, communities all up and down the state could lose out on hundreds of millions of dollars in federal funding. KCRW's Jerome Campbell tells us what they're doing about it, and he joins us right now. Hi, Jerome.
Hey, Steve.
Now, a big part of the census-taking effort is always involved going door-to-door. What's the Census Bureau doing about that?
So the Census Bureau is going to have census workers start on April 15th instead of April 1st this year. And the Bureau wants to do that so they can give these workers more time to train them on how to do their jobs going door to door while being mindful of social distancing. Another part of that is that a lot of the remote training that would have been done online is now going to be done in person this year to make sure that it's all done correctly. And really, the whole window of data collection has been moved back. Self-reporting that would have been concluded in July is now concluding in August. And as part of that, the Bureau is really pushing online submissions this year. And online submissions altogether are available for the first time this year. And the Bureau is thinking that with everybody at home, there's a better chance and more opportunity for people to fill it out on their computers and on their mobile devices.
Self-reporting, that's just filling out the forms, right, Jerome? When they come out in the mail and then people just send those forms back. Does the census think lots of people are going to do that this year?
Well, the odds are for them. Nearly 70% of Californians self-reported for the 2010 census. And then this year for the 2020 census, the current count shows about 20% of Californians have already responded. And most of those responses were submitted online. So I spoke to Tim Olson, who's the Associate Director for Field Operations for the U.S. Census Bureau. And he says these early numbers make him hopeful COVID-19 won't prevent an accurate count this year.
We're working with well over 300,000 organizations, from churches to mosques to schools to neighborhood associations to cities to tribes, and I believe we're going to get there.
All right, Jerome, self-reporting sounds great, but we know not everyone participates. They forget about it. Maybe it sits on a counter in the kitchen, all that mail that comes in. Or maybe they lose those reminders that you get in the mail altogether. So what happens then?
Well, this is the problem for what the census calls hard-to-count communities. And these are people who are renters, senior citizens, or maybe have limited English skills. Tave Samuelu is the executive director for another nonprofit that works with census takers in Asian communities. And that organization is called Empowering Pacific Islander Communities. And she says a lot of self-reporting is going to happen online, but even with access to the internet, many of the people that she's going to be reaching out to aren't going to have the internet skills to fill out the forms on their own. So she's saying that she's going to have to be looking towards younger generations to provide that assistance this year.
Even if our elders speak English, they don't speak internet. I'm still trying to get my mom to understand how to enter a URL, right? And so that is the other piece around where our, you know, these young folks come in both this tech translation, cultural translation, and language. And that's the three that I'm naming right now that they have to communicate across.
All right. That's a good thing. People helping people. But we're not hanging out with one another as much as we used to. Certainly, we're social distancing now, self-isolating. May not even be another person around to help in that situation to remind them. So what's the plan to reach them? How do you prod people to do this?
Well, reaching out to people who are self-isolating sounds like it's going to be something that's more tricky this year. Susan Henderson, who's the director for Disability Rights Education and Defense Fund, is trying to help older adults and people with disabilities who may be living on their own and trying to help those people sign up for the census. And her strategy is phone banking. She's reaching out to people who are the home workers or the assistant staff that are helping these people and having them call their clients and telling them to fill out the form.
What they're going to be doing is going through their client list and calling people and texting people and encouraging them to remember to take the census online if they can. And if they don't have broadband or a device where they can fill out the form online, you know, that's our biggest pivot right now is the phone banking, you know, calling people and reminding them to take the census.
But most importantly, of the people that I've talked to, everyone is saying that organizations alone aren't going to be able to reach everybody. They're really relying on just everyday people having person-to-person interactions, whether it's talking to your neighbors, of course, from 6 feet away, or talking to people who are in your Zoom meetings just during the day and encouraging them to sign up for the census.
So just do it and make sure if you get those reminders in the mail or whatever that you fill out these forms, whether physically or online. The mailings have begun. Like, a lot of people are getting those mailings, right?
Yeah. I mean, well, they sent them out on March 15th, and we should be getting them for the rest of the month.
All right. KCRW's Jerome Campbell reporting for us. Jerome, thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
We move on now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis. It is still March. Can you believe it? And what a difficult month. You've probably had to do a whole lot of adapting in the workplace in the wake of this pandemic. Maybe with all the stay-at-home orders, your company has reduced your hours or maybe even let you go. There's been a lot of that. Or maybe your company has shifted to making and selling other things that are more important in the current healthcare crisis. Alexander Czar heads up La La Land Production and Design, which is a luxury fashion brand that works with the likes of Louis Vuitton. At the moment, the factory there in downtown LA's Arts District has stopped making high-end leather handbags and other fashion gear, and instead is producing PPE, or personal protective equipment, for healthcare workers on the front lines of the COVID-19 crisis. And I want to thank Alexander for being with us today. Hi, Alexander.
Hello there.
Also joining us is Robin Christensen, co-owner of The Blinking Owl, a distillery in Santa Ana where she and her husband have converted their distillery from pumping out booze to pumping out hand sanitizer. Robin, thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Alexander, I'm going to start with you. How has the shift gone from making these leather goods, high-end stuff, to now making masks and gowns? What's it like to change your entire product line at a time like this?
Well, it has been a challenging because we all of our equipment, it was made for the making luxury products and the heavier stitching material. However, due to the background of mine, I'm an electrical engineer, and my engineering mind said, okay, if we can make a luxury product, we should be able to make this simple, very straightforward product as well too. So I re-geared everything. I put all the big machines away, and we established a whole floor plan to be able to make the face mask, the one-time use gown for the nurses, as well as the face shield. And I sat down all night and came up with all different type of the patterns to be able to make this product quickly in here.
How many masks are you able to make at this time?
At this specific moment, manually, we are making somewhere around 5,000 units per day. But I I also placed the two order for the big machines that they are coming from overseas. But however, it takes about 30 days before they ship it because everybody else in the world also ordering the machines right now. And that one potentially is going to give us about 20,000 masks per day.
20,000 masks per day. And you said what? 6,000 gowns per day as well.
Correct. And that 6,000 gowns is right now only it is working between myself and two other factories in downtown LA. I'm bringing online six more factories that we can ramp it up to make about the 20,000 gowns per day.
You know, we think about the money that you would make working on leather handbags for Louis Vuitton and stuff like this. Are you trying to at least keep the business afloat by making these items and selling them? Are you donating them? How does that work?
Well, to be honest with you right now, it's with the demand in the market being so high, for first time in my whole entire life, we can beat the China prices making domestic production. And because they ramped up their cost tremendously. So the labor, it is okay. We are just trying to keep the float and keep all my employees that which I have invested for last 15 to 20 years to teach them how to make the luxury goods, to have a living, then be able to pay the rents and put the food on the table.
Robin, I wanna get to you because, you know, I know stores are closed for fashion wear, so he's obviously adapting. But I believe sales are actually up for alcohol these days. Why did you decide to switch to making hand sanitizer?
Well, I'm kind of in the same boat because we're kind of a luxury alcohol, and 90% of our sales come from our tasting room. So our tasting room's closed now, so we're in the same boat as a lot of the bars and restaurants. So hand sanitizer was just such a saving moment for us. It's amazing to do because I feel like I'm back in my medical field that I used to be in. So it's such an important service. But we had to furlough our four bartenders, which we're now bringing back to help with labeling and packaging. So the same boat, we just are really wanting to keep our employees on. But also with restaurants and bars closed, that's the majority of our distribution business. So we're hit from both sides. So this hand sanitizer thing has been very much a godsend for us.
Who on your staff is doing that? I mean, and what kind of a shift has it been to be able to make the hand sanitizer as opposed to the alcohol? I mean, they're kind of the same ingredients, right?
They are. So our day-to-day wasn't going to change originally, but then we realized because, you know, doing, you know, a luxury product, you spend a lot more time per item. And so for our normal alcohol would take 10 days to make, and because it's double proof in hand sanitizer, like double the alcohol, we would only get about 170 gallons a week. And we realized that, you know, we suddenly got demand for 100,000 plus gallons. We realized we'd never meet it. So we ramped up really quickly, and we changed our entire way of producing. And one thing we're able to do is actually purchase high-proof spirits. So in addition to running our still and distilling, we're also purchasing thousands and thousands of gallons. So now, like this week, we have 2,000 gallons that are made. Next week, we're going to have 4,000 that are made. So we're definitely ramping up quickly.
And you're not putting all this hand sanitizer in fifths of alcohol, right? You're not, or 750 milliliter yeah. bottles. Like, how are you doing that?
No, we're really trying to, we're doing them in different sizes. So one, like the big bulk orders, we're actually putting in what are called drums, and they're 55 gallons. So like this morning, we had four drums go to California Highway Patrol. We had one go to the city of Anaheim. Tomorrow, we have one that we're donating to Chalk Hospital. We also go down from there, so we have a five-gallon container, and those have sold out. And we have one-gallon containers on back order. We also sold to just the public our 16-ounce hand sanitizer, which we put online on Friday, and it sold out in 20 minutes. So we have 1,000 more bottles of that coming this week. But the problem is just getting the bottles in stock. You know, a lot of people have turned to making hand sanitizer and with a lot of cleaning products, and it's the bottle like the actual containers that are backing us up. We can make the hand sanitizer. We just need to bottle it.
Wow. Alexander, do you know where she could get some bottles?
This is the same problem because I also thought about the bringing hand sanitizers. I secured the one whole entire containers of the hand sanitizer being coming from Mexico, and we had a similar situation. I could find a bottle, but I couldn't find the cap.
Yeah.
The cap and pump, it is the biggest problem. It's not necessarily the bottle itself. So I find that that why don't we offer that people at home, everybody has their shampoo bottles, they have their hand sanitizer bottles that after that they discarded. Why don't you create an opportunity that people, they can send their own empty bottles and we fill them and we send them back to them? Or on the grocery stores, we can put the big 5-gallon one and people, they can come in and fill up their own bottles. This is the only way that we can bypass the bottle situation right now.
Yep.
I'm thinking for both of you, you have employees at your places of business. And Alexander, that means people are coming into the office, people are coming into the factory and working.
Correct.
What are you doing to keep those employees safe in a time like this when we're social distancing, we're keeping away from people?
Exactly. That was a very challenging for me because my space, it was a little bit tight. My sewing machine, they were close to each other. So we had to remove every other sewing machine away from each other, that each person has almost about 10 feet distance from each other. And we built the mask immediately from the imports that we had for all of our employee. Everybody, any morning that they come in, they put their foot into some kind of the sanitizer before coming in. We take the temperature of them first before we let them in, and we give them a gown and a hat cover and the gloves and face mask before they even enter into the factory. And we also provide a staff with extra hours that they can just stitch from the other materials for a mask for all their families and relatives. So this way we can help them to also be safe themselves at home and their close family be safe, that we won't lose our staff at this needed time.
Robin, I know you had to lay off some of your staff earlier in the year. This was an alcohol beverage and control issue that you guys had to deal with, right? So
yes.
how are you managing that with the staff that you do have and keeping them safe and yourself safe?
Well, we have different piles of things that once they touch it, it needs to be sanitized. We're not letting, because we have customers coming in to pick things up. They don't cross a certain line. They stay outside, and we provide the bags to them. We're not taking credit cards here. They have to purchase online, and then they can come and pick things up. So we're keeping everything as distanced as possible. Nobody can come in the back unless they are wearing a mask or gloves protective wear. So, and right now we're just barely bringing people back.
Robin Christensen, co-owner of the Blinking Owl, now making hand sanitizer instead of alcohol. Robin, thank you for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Alexander Czar, who heads up La La Land Production and Design in downtown LA, making gowns instead of high-end fashion bags and Louis Vuitton stuff. Alexander, thank you.
Thank you. Robin, if I can pass you my information that we can contact and talk together with some other ideas that I have, that it can be very, very helpful right now.
I would love it. Yes.
We have to give each other hands right now at this moment.
Yes.
And we have to come together because our nation needs us.
Yes, please, please, please email me.
Thank you very much. I appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Thanks, you guys.
Thank you. It's so nice to talk to you.
Thanks, y'all.
Steve.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Onward now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Now, off to the OC. Orange County has been slow with releasing data and with testing potential cases of the novel coronavirus. Like the rest of California, it's seeing an uptick in the number of COVID-19 cases. At last count, 431 cases and at least 4 deaths. And the slow and often confusing response has some residents feeling frustrated and, yeah, anxious. It's Monday. That means Gustavo Arellano is here with KCRW's Orange County line to help us sort it all out. Hey, Gustavo.
Hola, Steve.
So the OC is finally releasing city-by-city numbers. Which cities have been hardest hit so far?
So some of them are not surprising. Irvine right now has a total of 38 cases. Irvine, of course, one of the bigger cities in Orange County, a lot of travel international. Anaheim, the biggest city in Orange County, is leading with 41 confirmed cases. But the big surprise in a way is Newport Beach. Newport Beach, relatively small, only a population of around 87,000, but confirmed cases at 37. So the way the Orange County Register, which has a really great interactive map, is breaking this down, it's breaking down every city by cases per 10,000 resident. Newport Beach right now, unfortunately, is in the lead with 4.2 cases per 10,000 residents, more than twice as much as the second closest city by far.
The county, though, Gustavo, still hasn't released data on smaller cities. Why is that?
So this is a bizarre thing about Orange County. Cities and counties all across the United States are releasing detailed stats about what cities have what cases or whatever. The county of Orange only started releasing city tallies just this past Friday. And on top of that, though, they said they're not going to be releasing any stats for cities that are under 25,000 in population or unincorporated areas of Orange County. The reason they're saying is the same reason why they were so slow to do the rest of the cities in the first place. They're saying they're trying to protect the privacy of the patients, which kind of makes no sense. And in fact, there's cities, like one of the cities where we don't know the case count is the city of Laguna Beach, which is, of course, in the coast. And a reporter for the Laguna Beach Independent, they asked the county of Orange during a press conference, hey, people in Laguna Beach want to know how many cases are in our city. Why won't you give it to us? And all the county's saying, oh, to protect the privacy of people. So I guess Anaheim shouldn't have any privacy or Newport Beach, but someplace like Los Alamitos does deserve that much more privacy. It just doesn't make any sense.
Well, I mean, they're not releasing names of people who have it. They're just saying the number, which is not a privacy issue. How much testing is available in Orange County right now? Is that there obviously aren't enough tests all over the state, all over the country for that matter. What about in the OC?
Well, so far, the healthcare agency says between its own public health lab and also commercial labs, well, there's been 5,185 people tested with 1,052 specimens available to test. So obviously, Orange County is a population of 3.1 million at last count. So that's a microscopic outlook of what we have so far in Orange County. But especially as people start trying to figure out a way to test people faster and cheaper, that's going to start rocketing up, and hopefully rockets up. Hopefully, as both private and public agencies try to get a test, a coronavirus test, that's going to be faster and cheaper and widely more available, then you're going to see those numbers start to go up. But that said, there was a case in Huntington Beach where a doctor was doing these drive-by coronavirus tests, and his landlord sent him a cease and desist letter saying, you know, you're violating your lease. You cannot do that. Stop that immediately. So some people get it, and some people, unfortunately, still don't.
I know Gustavo, LA County's closed off access to much of outdoor parks, beaches, hiking trails. The OC has been restrictive in access to its outdoor public spaces as well.
You know, one of the reasons why the Southern California got so hardcore was because last weekend, not this past weekend, but the one before, you had all these people going to Huntington Beach, and NBC Channel 4, they were interviewing people there and said, oh, we don't care about coronavirus. It's not going to affect our lives. So all the beaches in Orange County are closed. A lot of the parks are closed. That said, my mother-in-law, she came in over the weekend just to get some stuff off, and she went down Ortega Highway down in South Orange County, and she said, along the trails in San Juan Capistrano and beyond, there was a whole bunch of people hiking. There was a whole bunch of cars just parked on the side of the road. So you're going to see more police officers going out to these areas and warning people right now, just saying, hey, you're not allowed. If this beach area is closed, you're not allowed to go there. And probably there's going to be tickets being issued. It's not going to be popular, but what else are they supposed to do?
As far as being on the front lines, those people in healthcare, at hospitals, medical centers, and places like that, what about the looming protective gear shortages? Have we heard anything about that in Orange County?
Well, one of the big issues is there's not much money overall for the healthcare agency or whatever. The spending for the healthcare agency right now is around $68 million. You compare that to what the Sheriff's Department in Orange County has. The budget for them is $159 million. So, yeah, healthcare officials are saying, we don't have that much resources here in Orange County. We need more resources in Orange County, at least through discretionary funds.
What about the $2 trillion stimulus package that passed the Congress, signed by President Trump? Will any of that money make its way to Orange County?
Orange County has a lot of small businesses. Orange County also has a lot of corporations. Of course, people are still reading through the thousands and thousands of pages. They're going to be going through that. But so far, the congressional delegation for Orange County, all Democrats, they've all seemed to be applauding it. So they must be thinking there are going to be some monies that are going to be flowing into Orange County to help folks out. But at the same time, you know, a lot of the people that are going to be affected the most are going to be those folks who are renters, are going to be homeowners. We'll see what ends up happening. We'll see if Orange County, which of course is wealthier than Los Angeles County, but also has big pockets of poverty, we'll see how people react to it.
Gustavo Arellano, who writes for the LA Times, of course, Monday, joins us on Greater LA. Gustavo, thanks.
Gracias.
Well, that's going to do it for us today. We're online at kcrw.com/greaterLA. Subscribe to the podcast. Tell us how you're doing. Yeah, it is a tough ride for sure. We'd love to hear from you, and we will share those comments from time to time to keep us all motivated and connected in this time of need. We're counting on you every bit as much as you hopefully count on us. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thanks for your ears and your time. Hang in there. Take care of yourself.